This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
The grey water of the River Thames laps at the little jetty in the Tower of London. The barge beside it rocks and creaks on the ropes holding it in place. Then there's a clatter and a thump as a team of rowers throw their oars on board, followed by a thud as the men leap in and take their seats on the benches. From inside the tower, there comes the angry stamp of feet and a volley of impatient curses in French. Moments later, Eleanor of Provence, Queen of England, sweeps onto the little jetty. She's giving curt orders to the servant following behind her, but she's also railing at life, the universe, and everything. A rower reaches out a hand and helps the irate queen on board the barge. Then the gate opening out onto the jetty is shut and bolted from inside the tower. Aboard, Eleanor goes and sits inside a canopy, decorated with the royal arms. Then the crew push off from the jetty and out onto the River Thames, turning right and heading upriver, through the City of London in the direction of Windsor, just over 20 miles away. As they put their backs into their strokes, the rowers relax for a moment. But Eleanor keeps up her diatribe. There are a couple of targets of her complaints. First, she curses her husband, Henry III, the weak-willed and hapless Plantagenet King of England, whom she's just left moping in the Tower of London. Then she moves on to Simon de Montfort, Henry's brother-in-law, who's become the king's biggest political opponent and is right now riding around England whipping up a rebellion. Pointedly, the one person who doesn't get it in the neck is Eleanor's eldest son, Edward, a strapping and belligerent 24-year-old, who takes much more after her than his father. It's Edward she's going to meet in Windsor now, to try and plot a way to get his dad, Henry, out of his latest fix. Just as Eleanor's about to get on to whoever's next on her list, from the front of the barge, there comes an almighty splatter. Then another. Then there's a sharp cry of shock and disgust from one of the rowers. Eleanor stands up angrily and pokes her head out of the canopy she's sitting under to see what's going on. But when she does, she hears a great roar go up from the riverside. It's followed by a huge volley of splats and squelches, and more yells from the crew. She sees at once what's happening. She smells it too. From the riverbank, the royal barge is being pelted by a huge crowd of angry Londoners, clearly on the side of Simon de Montfort's rebellion. They're hurling eggs, stones, and handfuls of the rank dirt from the city's filthy streets. It's like London's sky is raining dung and rubbish, and it's all landing on the barge. As she tries to duck the barrage, Eleanor can see that all along the river shore, there are people eagerly waiting to join in this pelting. She can also hear some of the insults they're yelling. One particularly loud voice is screaming the word harlot over and over again. It's directed at her. Eleanor's heart is thumping as she retreats back inside the canopy. Moments later, the captain puts his head through. Wiping a smear of egg and what looks like dog mess from his face, he tells her they have to turn back. Eleanor nods. It's not like they have much choice. With filth and insults still hailing down on them, the crew of the Royal Barge turn and row as fast as they can back to the Tower of London. In a few minutes, they're on the jetty where they began. Trying to muster as much dignity as she can, Eleanor steps off the jetty and goes to the gate that leads back into the tower. She hammers on the wooden door that was locked behind her when they left and shouts to the gatekeeper to hurry up and unbolt it. Silence. Eleanor calls and bangs again, growing furious now. Still, there's no answer. It's impossible that there isn't a gatekeeper behind the door. Why on earth isn't he opening the gate? She bangs one more time, and it dawns on her. Her idiot husband Henry has ordered the gatekeeper not to let her back in. Either he's sulking with her for leaving him and going off to take command of things with Edward, or he's terrified that the rebels who've been pelting her with rubbish are going to get into the tower and do even worse to him. Either way, this is very bad. Eleanor looks around her in despair. As she does, she sees the figure of the Mayor of London hurrying down the steps that lead from the jetty out towards the city streets. He has a very grim look on his face and a squadron of armed guards at his back. He holds out his hand to Eleanor. He's offering to take her off to a safe house in the city until the trouble blows over. Unless she wants another pelting with God knows what, she knows she has to go with him. But she also knows she won't forget this. And when she tells Edward about it, he's not going to let this rest until the man responsible for her humiliation, Simon de Montfort, is dead. I'm Dan Jones, and from Sony Music Entertainment, this is History. Season 4 of A Dynasty to Die For. Episode 6, The Battle of Lewes. The world's full of people celebrating their successes, but if the Plantagenets have taught us anything, it's that failing is much more interesting. So that's why I'm certain you're going to love the podcast How to Fail. The very brilliant Elizabeth Day invites guests on to talk about three of their biggest failures and what they've taught them about life. It's a great way to hear a new side to people you may think you know. Guests include Bernie Sanders, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and Stanley Tucci. Give it a try. Find How to Fail wherever you get your podcasts. 10 years before Eleanor was being pelted with rubbish on the River Thames, she was doing a fine job standing in for her husband Henry and ruling England while he tried to fix a mess Simon de Montfort had made down in Gascony. That was 1253, or last episode of this podcast, if you like, and things were sort of okay for the Plantagenets. But now we're in July 1263, and things are very much not okay at all. In fact, what Eleanor sees as she tries to get from the Tower of London to meet up with her son Edward in Windsor is a snapshot of how bad things have become in England in the 47 years that Henry has been on the throne. Henry hasn't been the nastiest, cruelest, most tyrannical king, but he's made mistake after mistake after mistake. He's been wildly overgenerous to people he likes, then switched up on them and turned them into enemies. He's become obsessed with going on crusade, then spent all the money he collected for it on a mad mission to conquer Sicily, which never even leaves England. He's let rebellions get out of hand in Wales and Gascony without ever properly asserting royal control there. He signed off on the Treaty of Paris in 1259, which has given away all the historical Plantagenet claims to the empire his granddad Henry II built up. He's not only been hamstrung by Magna Carta, his dad John's treaty with the barons of yesteryear, he's also managed to have his hands tied even more tightly by his own version, known as the Provisions of Oxford of 1258, which have basically taken England's government away from him and put it in the hands of a baron's council. It's not the greatest track record, to say the least. What happens in 1263 is, in one sense, just an extension of that. But it would be unfair to put all the blame on Henry now. In recent years, Eleanor's played her part too, and so has Edward. To boil a very complicated story down to its bones, Eleanor and Edward have encouraged Henry to do whatever he can to wriggle out of the tight controls the Provisions of Oxford have placed on him. Although Eleanor enjoyed the fact that the Provisions kicked her family's enemies in court, known as the Lusignans, out of England, she thinks everything else about them pretty much stinks. Edward, who was mates with the Lusignans, is on board with all this, and much like John, back in the day, they managed to get the Pope to declare that the Provisions of Oxford were illegal and should never have been imposed on the king. For a brief moment, they managed to prop Henry back up, as king in his own right, but that moment didn't last long, because the Provisions of Oxford have a hardcore champion in the form of Simon de Montfort. When they were forced on Henry in 1258, Simon and the other barons who'd pushed for them swore a holy oath to uphold them, come what may. Simon has taken that oath very, very seriously. And he's made it now his life's mission to see that Henry can never escape from them. Why? Well, partly because that's the kind of guy Simon is. He's an alpha male on steroids with a side dish of type A personality and a big helping of religious zealotry for dessert. Partly it's because Simon and Henry have history. Simon insulted Henry years ago after a battle in Poitou by saying he should be locked up like Charles the Simple. Henry insulted Simon by recalling him from Gascony and accusing him of bungling the leadership of royal government there. It's a legacy beef, in other words, and Simon in particular has no desire to squash it. So when Henry, Eleanor and Edward try to overthrow the Provisions of Oxford, Simon isn't having any of it. By 1263, he's in open rebellion, and he's whipping up a coalition of supporters who are also fed up with the current royal regime. He's got a particular bee in his bonnet about foreigners, who he thinks are a bad influence on Henry, and is stirring up popular xenophobia to help rally people to his cause. Of course, that's rich coming from Simon, who wasn't born in England himself, but he tries not to mention that if he can help it. The fact is, by the summer of 1263, when the Londoners side with Simon and attack the Queen's boat, he's on the verge of taking control of the whole country. In fact, the very next day, he turns up at the Tower in person and forces Henry to promise that he will obey the Provisions of Oxford after all. This basically puts Simon in charge of the country, running it in the King's name with a council to back him up. It's a disaster, and Eleanor decides to do something about it. Her sister Margaret is married to Louis IX, King of France. So, working with other loyalists, she reaches out and gets King Louis to offer to arbitrate between Henry and Simon. Louis is one of the most powerful, influential, pious and well-respected men in Europe. And since the Treaty of Paris in 1259, he's supposed to be an ally. He doesn't really have any business meddling in English affairs directly, but he's also hard to say no to. In the second half of 1263, Louis ponders evidence from both sides. Then, in January 1264, he announces his verdict. It's exactly the one Eleanor, her son Edward, and their allies want. Louis says that Simon de Montfort and the rebel barons are completely and utterly in the wrong. They've overstepped the mark, and everything they've done to try and shackle the king has been illegal. It's a glorious victory for Eleanor, who's worked tirelessly behind the scenes to get this decision, and stays in France to celebrate it. But it's also a crushing defeat for Simon de Montfort. That means there's only one possible outcome. In the spring of 1264, England erupts into a full-blown civil war. On the 14th of May, 1264, on the rolling South Downs of England, outside the town of Lewes, two English armies line up to face one another in battle. One of them is led by Henry III, or at least he's there with the army, along with his much more capable brother, Richard, Earl of Cornwall, back from his Kingdom of Germany, and his increasingly bloodthirsty son, Edward, who's still seething about his mum getting egged in London nearly a year ago. At the top of the hill in front of them is Simon de Montfort, with his own army of rebels, all wearing white crosses on their armour. For Simon, and for them, this has become about much more than just getting political concessions out of the king. It's a crusade. They're fighting in the name of God to put right what they see as the wickedness of Henry's long reign. So, among the preparations for the battle are whispered prayers and fervent appeals to the Lord to see their side victorious. So this is the moment where we began this season. A full-blown civil war, a crusade, being fought on English soil. Simon de Montfort on one side, Henry and his family on the other. The battle will determine God's final judgment. And at Lewes, on that day in May, God makes his decision abundantly clear. At the signal, the two sides rush towards one another in waves. Edward leads a cavalry charge, barreling straight into the Londoners on Simon's side and wreaking bloody revenge for his mother as his knights hack many of the citizens to pieces and send the rest fleeing for their lives. Across the rest of the field, though, things go far worse for the Royalists. The centre of Simon's army comes charging down the hill and collides with a force led by Richard, Earl of Cornwall. They get the better of Richard's men and push them backwards, and Richard has to flee the battlefield to avoid being killed. He takes cover in a windmill and is surrounded by a force of Simon's men who chant, come down, you wicked miller. That leaves Henry. He's not much cop in battle. He has plenty of knights around him, but they're walloped. Henry has his horse killed underneath him and moves on to a replacement, which is also quickly felled by the overwhelming numbers around him. Henry's forced back and escapes into Lewes Priory. When Edward hears what's happening, he comes to join him, but once he's in there, the priory is surrounded by Simon's men. They won't burn it down or storm it, it's a Christian building after all. But they have a trump card. They bring out their prisoner, Richard, Earl of Cornwall, who was eventually grabbed from the mill. They say that unless Henry and Edward surrender, they'll decapitate Richard there and then. Even with so much resting on this battle, Henry can't cope with the idea of watching his brother die. He surrenders. By the end of the day, the royal army has been defeated. Henry, Richard, and Edward have all been taken prisoner, and Simon has forced them to agree to restore the provisions of Oxford. And that, as they say, is that. The once mighty House of Plantagenet is a shadow of its former glory, reduced to figureheads without a single shred of power for the rest of history. Or it might have been. But in Simon's moment of absolute triumph, he makes one big mistake. Perhaps it's because he has lingering affection for his old friend. Perhaps it's the old chivalric rules of battle, where you capture your enemy for ransom, but don't kill other blue-blooded folk if you can help it. Perhaps he doesn't believe it's what God would want. Whatever the reason, Simon decides to let Henry, Richard, and Edward live. It's a decision he'll pay for in the grisliest way imaginable. After his triumph at Lewes, Simon takes full control of England. He has Henry where he wants him, moping around hearing masses for Edward the Confessor and feeling sorry for himself. Edward, who was always more of a threat, is kept as a prisoner, and Eleanor is still abroad, making herself useful by keeping Gascony in check. But Simon soon finds that criticising rulers is a lot easier than being one, and that having a load of barons to deal with can be problematic to say the least. He has particular trouble with the nobles whose lands are near Wales. He cuts a deal with the Welsh to stop them rebelling, but finds that the border barons, known as marcher lords, then start cooking up a rebellion against him. So, although he spends Christmas 1264 partying like a king in his castle at Kenilworth, in 1265 things start to get very sticky indeed for Simon. A huge rebellion is brewing in the west. And now that he's set himself up as the sort of king, he's the man who's got to deal with it. The crunch comes at the end of May 1265, almost exactly a year since the Battle of Lewes, when one of the marcher barons who's fed up with Simon pulls the ripcord and helps Edward escape from captivity. By this time, Edward is 26 years old. He's more than 6 feet tall, in an age where that would get you an instant NBA contract. And he's got such a wicked temper that he's said to have once scared a man literally to death by shouting at him. So from the moment Edward is let loose in May 1265, he starts gathering supporters and troops to get his own back on Simon. He's very much not his father's son, and he's going to bring back his family to its former glory or die trying. But that's for next time on This Is History. If you can't wait for more Plantagenet action, a reminder that the next episode is already out, over on This Is History Plus, where you can listen ad-free alongside hours of subscriber-only content, where I chat with my producer about the Middle Ages. This time, we discuss the disaster that was the Battle of Lewes, and I reveal Edward's genius, if not somewhat unbelievable, escape tactic. To start your free trial, go to Apple Podcasts and click Try Free, or head to thisishistorypod.com.